3 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. And here we go. Tonight at Milwaukee, Wednesday at Philly, Thursday at Boston, Sunday at Brooklyn, Monday at the New York Knicks.
Let's go!
Oh, and then you come home and you host the LA Clippers.
Let's go!
And the Utah Jazz. A seven-game trip through the ringer for the Phoenix Suns. What will things look like at the end of those seven games? And we don't even have to count the two games at the end. Just the road trip. Where are they going to be in the standings? How are they going to play? Is this the final test for this Suns before the playoffs? We've eyeballed, Gambo, this portion of the schedule since the minute the second half of the schedule came out. Where are the Suns going to be when it's done?
The three games up in the loss column. I'm going to say that they are not all alone in second place.
Okay.
That they're tied or a game behind.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
So that's where I'm going. I just think that this is a tough schedule. I think that they could lose, some of these games here, and it's very possible that that they end up tied or it's very, very close. Then after that, I think the schedule gets easier and they can reestablish themselves. I think it's going to be, it's three games too. They'd have to lose three in order for somebody to tie them, the Clippers to tie them. And it's only five games.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go 2-3, there's a chance, maybe not. Maybe they're still ahead. Think about it like that. Okay, if they go 2-3, the Clippers would have to not lose a game in order to tie them. So I think when they come out of it, and I'm going to reassess myself just because it's five games. When they come out of it, they are still going to be in second place. Still going to be there. Because I don't think they're going 0-5, and I don't think they're going 1-4. I think that they could win two of these games.
Yeah, it's weird for me, and I don't know if you feel the same way about this. I obviously my confidence level about this trip, I think, was shaken a little bit by the fact that they lost the way they did to San Antonio, right? Because that was just such a I'm going back and forth. I read Jay Crowder's comments after the game. He's like, man, just throw that one out. That was just a whatever kind of game. Throw that one out. Do I throw that one out, or does it give me something to be concerned about? Or do I just toss it aside and say, hey, it was just one of those nights and don't worry about it, it's no big deal? The other thing to consider, and the other thing that I can't get out of my mind going into this five or seven game stretch, depending on how you want to look at it, is that the Phoenix Suns all year long have played so well in games like this. All year long. They
step up in these games.
They've succeeded almost every single time they've had to play in one of these step-up games. And recently, the only time they've really failed was when they played the Clippers on that second night of a back-to-back, when they were so very obviously kind of emotionally drained and spent having played Utah the night before. Other than that, they play so well in these games. I actually feel kind of bullish about how they're going to do on this trip. I think they'll be okay because these are the games all year long they have excelled in all season. I don't know. I actually feel kind of good about it. Am I nuts?
I would probably feel better about it if Booker was playing better, but I think Booker's in a little bit of a slump right now.
He is.
So I'm a little worried about that. I think that, they're deep. See, when you look at Milwaukee and you look at their starting lineup, Giannis is really great, right? And I like Drew Holiday. But then you're talking Bryn Forbes, the former Spur. You're talking Brooke Lopez, who's okay. I like Middleton. I always liked Middleton. I think that the Suns are just better depth-wise. They're not going to have Dante DiVincenzo. He's going to be out for the game. So there'll be no Dante DiVincenzo. So I think that hurts them a little bit. I mean, it's a good matchup. I think it's a very equal matchup. I mean, the Bucks do not do a good job defending the three. The Suns usually shoot the three well, but, as you pointed out earlier, Booker's not shooting the three very well right now.
No, in the last seven games or so, he's only shooting about 22.5%
from
the three-point line. It's been a struggle for him.
Which could be tired. It could be that he's tired. It's very possible.
Yeah, tired legs. He hasn't looked quite right the last week or so. He's trying to force it, he's trying to find it a little bit. Much like a baseball hitter who I think is in a little bit of a slump at the plate. It looks like he's kind of reaching a little bit for his game, and he's not finding it where he's used to finding it. The other thing to like about the Suns, at least tonight, they haven't lost back-to-back games since, January? Mid-January?
It's been a long time. Is it January?
I think it's – I'll have to look at the schedule to be sure. I think it's January the last time they lost back-to-back games.
Well, it's not – you know, they didn't play yesterday, so
– January. January 22nd, 23rd, and 27th, a three-game losing streak. Back-to-back games against Denver and Oklahoma City. Remember they were 8-8?
Yeah.
And that was the game where Monty Williams called himself a doofus?
Yep.
They haven't lost back-to-back games since Monty Williams called himself a doofus.
All right, so maybe it's good. What's – I would have, in our FanDuel thing, right? I would have, I would have taken San Antonio with the points. So I'd be 2-0 right now in my betting.
Would you have?
I would have. Yeah.
Do you have any verification of that?
No, I would have. I just would have. I went against them again. What was the first game? Was it Sacramento?
First game was
Sacramento.
Sacramento. They were laying down. They were getting 12.5.
Yep. I took Sacramento on the points. I would have took San Antonio on the points. But tonight, if Phoenix is getting a decent amount of points, I might go with Phoenix.
I can't believe we're doing this. Jordan, will you please do me the solid and look up the spread for me? Just out of completely, I have no skin in this. I'm just kind of curious what the...
Milwaukee 2.5.
Oh, that's it?
That's it. That's a close one. Here's, as I ping pong back and forth about how to feel about this game, the other thing to consider, too, is that the Suns, okay, they have played Milwaukee. They did beat Milwaukee.
Yes.
But in some ways, this is a tour now of the teams that the Suns saw who weren't at full strength. Milwaukee's at full strength. Drew Holiday's back. He's going to play.
Yes.
Right? And you mentioned
DiVincenzo's
out.
He's got a sprained toe.
He's a significant contributor, so they'll miss him. Philly, when they beat Philly the first time, Philly was full strength. It was one of the only full strength wins the Suns have had against one of the elite teams in the NBA this year. Boston, they didn't have Jalen Brown or Marcus Smart, if I remember
right.
Yes,
both of those guys were out.
The first time the Suns, both back. Brooklyn's a mess. KD has that thigh injury now.
Yep.
I don't know if he's going to be ready to play for the Suns game. Harden's been out with a hamstring injury, so I have no idea what you're getting in Brooklyn. And the Knicks, to their credit, they're playing very, very hard. Very hard.
Well, I want to see.
And the Suns haven't seen them yet this year.
No, they haven't played the Knicks.
Yeah. The second one they play later on one of their few remaining home games. So some of the guys that missed the games the first time around the Suns played, the Suns will now see them this week.
Yeah, the question is really, Giannis went for 47 the last time they played the Suns. He was unstoppable. They had no answer for him. So we'll see if they can find a way. Now, he was nursing a little bit of a knee injury, but he's back. He's playing better. They lost to Memphis the other day. Milwaukee did. They had a little bit of a winning streak going, and they just lost to Memphis. They didn't play well. The Bucks are a top 10 offense team. They're a top 10 defense team. They're scoring about 117 points per 100 possessions, so they're really good at getting their offense, getting their points going. So the thing that you worry about is is Giannis going to go for 40 plus again? If you remember that first game, even though they won, right, they had no answer for Giannis. Like, Giannis got whatever he wanted against the Suns the last time they played him.
Monty, after Saturday's game, says it's a great time to head out.
It'd be a great time for us to get away. We had a good homestand. Didn't end it the way we wanted it to, but we got a chance to go out on the road, bond some more. It's us against everybody. It's a great time for us to bounce back.
And you've mentioned this in the past. There's only one team in the NBA in single digits when it comes to losses on the road. And that's the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, they're a great road team.
17-7, best road record in the NBA.
Yeah, now Milwaukee gave up 128 the other day to Memphis. I mean, their defense was not very good in that game. DiVincenzo is a good defender, and he's an impact scorer. So with him being out, we'll see if that affects them. But Memphis had their way scoring against them. So it should be an interesting game tonight. I mean, it's probably a close game that comes down to the last few minutes.
Yeah, probably. And again, we'll be kind of looking for, we talked about this earlier, the fatigue that we saw on Saturday night. You mentioned Devin Booker. His numbers recently, his last three games in particular, but if you want to hit zoom out, his last seven games, his numbers are down. He's in a little bit of a slump. Chris Paul hasn't made a lot of shots the last three games or so. He's only shooting like 30-something percent, 35%, I think, from the floor in his last three games or so. Is that fatigue still a factor tonight? Are they fresh? Were they just kind of bored and overlooked San Antonio? I mean, that again, that's the thing that I feel so good about this trip. These are not the games I worry about with the Suns. I worry about a Spurs
team. The San Antonio game, the Sacramento
three guys.
Game.
Those are the games you worry about with the Suns. I don't.
Because they seem like they're bored in some of these games.
Yeah.
Now, they usually could turn it on and make sure they win. Against San Antonio, it was odd. They never once even made a halfway decent run. They never got going in that game. So maybe it's a learning experience for them, and they'll push forward against Milwaukee. But you're 100% right. They seem to take these games a lot more seriously and really get up for these games.
Join Ron Wolfley on the eve of the draft as the Cardinals get ready to make their first-round selection. Text the word draft to 620-620 for an invitation to the exclusive Arizona Sports Valley virtual draft experience featuring Wolf and other football guests. Again, that's draft. Text that word to 620-620. The Valley Virtual Series is presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. Madison Bumgarner's performance yesterday, a sigh of relief from many Diamondback fans, but according to Mike Hazen, the patience has always been there for Mad Bum. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. And I quote, when it comes to Mike Hazen, we're happy we signed him. The intention for us to sign him was to get a workhorse starting pitcher that he's been for the entirety of his career and an elite one. Yes, we are aware of what could happen, not to all of them, as veteran starting pitchers rack up innings. But we felt like, and still do, that his physical strength, his ability to repeat his delivery, his knowledge, know-how, and presence would allow him to succeed. Close quote. That's Mike Hazen.
I don't expect at any point Mike Hazen is going to give up on his biggest free agent signing this quickly. I just don't think that that's going to be. They're going to work through it, and they invested a lot of money in him, and now they're going to invest time in him and try to get him right. I can't see any scenario. If Mike Hazen never gives up on Madison Bumgarner, we'll know, because they're either going to get rid of him, they're going to trade him, they're going to release him. But I think in the meantime, they're going to keep throwing him out there every fifth day and just try to work with him and get him to the point where he can contribute to this team.
Credit where credit's due. These are comments that were given, I believe, exclusively to Zach Buchanan over at The Athletic. And no, just because I mentioned him by name doesn't mean he's pound for pound my favorite writer.
Oh, he is.
You had this story in your email, too. So is he pound for pound your favorite writer in town, too?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't have a pound for pound.
You don't have
favorite.
A pound for pound favorite writer in town? Okay.
No.
No, we both had this story in our email today because the comments were exclusive to The Athletic, and we want to make sure.
I'll go with Bickley.
Bickley, pound for pound,
that's
is your favorite writer.
That's
probably
my favorite. I probably read more of Bickley than anybody else.
Fair enough.
Yep.
It was Mike Hazen talking about Madison Bumgarner. This was before his start on Sunday.
Okay.
So again, on Sunday, and we don't have the audio for it because it was an exclusive conversation, but again, yesterday. Five innings, struck out five, gave up the one run, a couple of hits, didn't have a lot of traffic on the bases. The question that Hazen was asked, Bumgarner gets all of this attention because of the deal you guys signed him to. In any long-term contract for a player progressing through his 30s, there's risk. But that risk is usually on the back end. When you signed him, was seeing him struggle this much so early in the contract a scenario that you thought about? And the answer from Hazen is that's a complicated question, and it's going to be a complicated answer. But at the end of it, quote, we're happy we signed him, close quote. I don't know what else he's supposed to say. He's got to project confidence and belief and
okay, right now, your true belief, if Mike Hazen could go back and not do that deal.
He would go back and not do that deal.
He would go back and not do that deal.
He would go back and not do it.
There's no way that you could tell me that Mike Hazen would be like, you know what? I would do that deal 10 times over. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it.
Nope.
If you could go back and redo that day, we could turn back the clock, we could get in the DeLorean and go back in time, and Mike Hazen says, hey, I want to offer you 5 years and $85 million. If we could go back to that moment before he picked up the phone and called the agent, and right then and there, he would be like, no, I'm not going to make that call.
It was crazy. I can actually remember exactly where we were when that happened. We were on the road. We were at an AT&T store somewhere in the Northwest Valley.
We had been talking about Madison Bumgarner a lot, and I had kept saying, because I was in constant contact with the D-backs on this, that they weren't willing to go to $100 million. They were not going to go to $100 million. That was our big focus, was they're not going to go to $100 million. He's going to have to take a lot less than $100 million if he wants to come here, and he did.
I know we had talked about it leading up to it, but that day where it happened, oh, yeah, man, I can picture, because we got him on the show. I remember exactly where we were when it all happened, and go back in time to that day. Yeah, because I think the pandemic and what it did to him last year. And
where were we at?
We were at an AT&T store.
We were at an AT&T store when Paul Goldschmidt got traded and we broke that story.
Yes, but I was off that day.
You were off that day. It was me and Luke Lipinski.
Yep. Yeah, we were at it. It was somewhere like Bell and the I-10 or something.
Yeah,
like
I remember
that.
Like, Luke, I know you don't work with me a whole lot, but I can't talk right now. You got to do the show. I cannot talk. Like, Luke was talking, and then he'd look at me to talk, and I'd be like, dude, like, I don't hear one word you're saying, man.
Yeah. There was a lot of Q&A here in this piece with Zach. If Bumgarner's struggles continue, what are your options in the short term was the question. Answer, that is a too soon question. I don't anticipate that happening. We asked Torrey Lovello a similar question last week, remember?
How long do you back him for? I mean, you can't keep throwing him out there every fifth day if he's not giving you five innings and giving you quality starts, right?
Yeah, that's not my decision. While the 26 guys are here, I'm coaching them the best way that I know how. I'm putting them in the best position I possibly can. So, yeah, that's not my decision. I want to make sure that these guys get what they need from me, get what they need from the staff about believing, about pushing and going. So, you know, look, Bum needs to find out where that fastball is going, work off of that, and that's going to be our focus between these next starts.
Yeah, they're all in on this guy right now. And they're going to be all in on this guy next year, too, because they can't get out of the contract. They can't trade him. They got to hope for the best. And they got to hope that he pitches. He was up too high in the zone yesterday, but he got out of it. He got a nice break in the first inning with Soto getting caught at third base, trying to go from first to third. And that got him out of an inning in which he threw a lot of pitches. And yesterday was a good day. I mean, it was a good day. It takes the pressure off of 5 days. The pressure's off of Lovello. It's off of Hazen. And it's actually off of Mad Bum, too. And Hergis, and now, yep. You know, now you got the Atlanta game. But here's the thing, and right here, what if he goes out there against Atlanta and he throws four innings and gives up seven hits and five runs and he's out of there in a fourth? We're right back to square one.
Right back to the start.
Right back to square one.
Yep.
The ability for Bumgarner to be a consistent pitcher, and this is what you want out of aces that you're paying a lot of money, you got to take the ball every fifth day and give your team a chance to win. You have to. And if you're not doing that, then you know what? You're not an ace.
They referenced this during the broadcast yesterday on Bally Sports Arizona with Steve and Bob. And these were comments we played last week as well on our show. Matt Hergis on the game plan to get Mad Bum right. A lot of it was just throw the technology out. Throw the analytics out. Throw the pitch tracks machine out and just focus on the man.
Not that we're ignoring analytics and TrackMan and things like that, but it's I guess the premise is, he's getting back to execution. And I've always said that. Even last year, I think the reason why he wasn't successful every time out is because he wasn't executing. And I think that's one message to him is, listen, when you execute your pitches, when you're commanding the baseball with your fastball, your cutter, and your curveball, with a few changeups here mixed in, that's when you're great. That's when you've been great. So that's what we're doing right now. That's what he's focusing on now.
And the one overall takeaway from the story with Hazen that Zach did is that Mike keeps going back to this idea and over and over again. Look, the stuff is there. He's physically healthy. The stuff is there. He's physically healthy. If he weren't physically healthy, if the stuff that we were anticipating wasn't there, then I'd be worried. Okay, but the stuff is there. Where he is on the gun, that's where we want him to be. That's where we expected him to be. His physical health is fine. He's in very good health. He's not nursing an injury, coming back from an injury. He thinks that because those two factors are in place, everything eventually will come together for Mad Bum because the stuff is there and physically his health is fine and the rest will follow. That might be being optimistic, but that's what he seems to believe.
He has to be optimistic. Again, if he can go back and turn back time, I'm positive that they don't do the deal with Mad Bum and they go in a different direction. But they're stuck with this. You're married to it, right? There's no divorce right now coming for the Diamondbacks and Mad Bum. But we're all, like, he had a good start yesterday. He went five innings. He gave up one run. It was a good start. His ERA went from in the 11s to in the 8s. But nobody is, you know, but we're still holding our breath. And now the next starts against the Atlanta Braves, a much better offensive team. And Acuna got hurt yesterday. He's day-to-day right now, I think, with an abdominal mess injury. But we'll see. Like, we'll be holding our breath when they take on the Atlanta Braves next weekend.
Yeah. Even though it's not a worst-case scenario, Donovan Mitchell still going to be out a while. How will his absence impact the rest of the Western Conference playoff race? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. When last we left you on Friday, Donovan Mitchell had suffered an injury that we were starting to get word on wasn't as bad as it looked. They played that weird day game, and Donovan Mitchell hurt his ankle, and we quickly got word that it wasn't a high ankle sprain, that it was a low ankle sprain, and that he was probably going to be okay. He is going to be out a while. Maybe that opens the door for the Suns. Maybe it doesn't. But here's Quinn Snyder, the Jazz coach, talking about how they're going to have to adapt to life without Donovan Mitchell for a
Obviously,
while.
Obviously, Donovan, such a big part of what we do that, you know, like any player that's out, you miss him. But you try to figure out ways to, you know, to play well and win, regardless of who's available, because those things are going to happen. And we have to be prepared for that, you know, regardless of who it is.
No structural damage. The MRI shows no problems there, but he is still expected to miss several games, Gambo.
Yeah, and I thought the two, you know, their schedule, we talked about this the other day. I think if I'm them, I am targeting that Suns game. I think that they could go 2 weeks without him, get him back for that Suns game. They play the Lakers again today, right?
Yes,
I think they had the two
correct.
Games against the Lakers. And then I think it's Houston, Minnesota, Minnesota. The schedule gets very easy. Games that they can win without Donovan Mitchell against bad teams. But the big game for them is going to be that Suns game. It's a Friday night, not this coming Friday, but the next Friday. And I was looking ahead when we saw the injury. I'm saying, hey, give him 2 weeks off. Make sure he's ready for that Suns game, because that's a big swing game.
Yeah, that is a big swing game. In the way it stands right now, both of these teams are in action tonight. You mentioned Utah taking on the Lakers tonight. That's a 7 o'clock tip time on ESPN. 2 hours prior, the Suns are obviously taking on the Milwaukee Bucks tonight in a game that you'll hear on ESPN 620. The way things stand in the standings right now, the Jazz have a game and a half lead over the Suns. It's a one-game separation in the loss
yes,
column.
Yes, which matters.
Utah has 15 losses. The Suns have 16 losses. The Clippers have 19 losses on the season, even though they have the same number of wins as the Phoenix Suns. So the way it all kind of shakes out is everything is very close. Clippers are obviously playing some very good basketball right now. The Jazz not only didn't have Mitchell on Saturday against the Lakers, they didn't have Gobert in that game.
Rudy Gobert didn't play right.
In that game. They kind of rested a bunch of guys for the same sort of thing. I imagine they'll be full strength tonight, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about the Suns and resting players and whether they should do it later on or not. But, you know, if you're the Jazz, like this is, you know, you know, we've seen a devastating injury with Denver and Jamal Murray being out. Now you've got this injury, and they kind of, you know, survived a little bit, right? I mean, it's not going to be devastating. They're going to get him back, but they're going to have to go a few games without him. And it could be a positive because he gets some rest. And, you know, it could be a negative because you just don't know if this is an injury that's going to linger.
Here we go. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The Arizona Sports signing bonus.
Yeah, here we go indeed. Daniel Hernandez from Peoria. You are our Arizona Sports signing bonus winner at 3:35. Daniel Hernandez from Peoria. You're on the clock, my friend. 10 minutes to call us. 602-260-9870. Claim your $500 signing bonus. Again, Daniel Hernandez from Peoria. 602-260-9870. If we didn't call out your name, you can still win. Text the word bonus to 620-620. Listen for your name tomorrow, 7:35 in the morning with Doug and Wolf, 1:35 in the afternoon with Bickley and Murata, and then 3:35 again with us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Daniel Hernandez from Peoria. 10 minutes to call 602-260-9870. Sticking with the NBA, very rarely will you hear a player make an admission like this. But here's Eric Bledsoe from the New Orleans Pelicans. Yep, I just wasn't paying attention in the huddle.
Was the plan when they tied it up? I mean, like, was it conveyed in the huddle that you guys were supposed to foul?
Yeah. Yeah, and I wasn't paying attention, lack of focus. And you D-Rose got downhill and made a great play.
Eric Bledsoe of the Pelicans admitting,
I wasn't paying attention.
I wasn't paying attention.
I don't want to be here. I mean, is that next? Van Gundy told his team to foul. That there'd be no way that you can get a game-tying three-pointer. Bledsoe watched. Derrick Rose dribbled right by him, unscathed. You know, baited Lonzo Ball into leaving the perimeter, passed it out. They get the three-pointer, and it ends up costing them. and then a Bledsoe air ball, and then, you know, disaster in overtime, and then the Pelicans have now lost three straight games, and they're on the ropes trying to get that 10th spot in the Western Conference playoffs.
Stan Van Gundy was livid out of his mind, man.
No excuse whatsoever today. None. None. I don't care if you're a senior in high school, you can execute what we were supposed to be doing with 7.8 seconds to go. So no excuse whatsoever.
I got one more from SVG.
Tonight's
yeah.
as frustrated as I've been, because tonight's simple. Nobody had to make a play. You know, you didn't have to make a play, make a shot, make a pass. You didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to do anything.
Hey,
you just had to do what the hell you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
You could tell. You could tell for a second he didn't want to say hell. You could tell for a second that he was starting to put
a worse word.
Yeah, he was starting to put his teeth into his lips, like he was gonna, like there was a F sound maybe that was gonna come out. And yeah, you know, on second thought, I'm gonna say hell instead of the other word. You kind of like what I do on, you know, Fruit Tuesdays. You could tell he was getting ready to say something else, and I think he decided to hit a check and say what he said.
I mean, he just had to foul. I mean, he told him to foul, and Bledsoe wasn't paying attention. I mean, Bledsoe owned up to it. I mean, he did.
Oh, yeah.
He owns up to it. I wasn't paying attention. I mean, how you know, you're making all this $15, $20 million a year, and you're not paying attention? How are you not paying attention? Like, how do you know? I mean, this team is struggling to get into that play-in game, and now they got to deal with this, and there's a lot of talks in New Orleans that this, you know, this team needs a shakeup and everything, and obviously Van Gundy, you know, he didn't call out Bledsoe by name,
No.
I mean, that was interesting, right? He said he's just frustrated. He's been all season, and a high school team could have executed that, and I mean, they're up by three with 7.8 left. All you have to do is foul, let them hit two foul shots, and then play that game, but for some reason, Bledsoe allowed Derrick Rose to go by him, and then Lonzo Ball slid over to get him, and then Rose kicked the ball to Reggie Bullock, and he knocked down a three-pointer to tie the game.
I would suspect, having watched a lot of basketball in my years, that this happens more often than we're led to believe. It's just very rare when you hear a player admit it.
I wasn't paying attention, lack of focus.
Yeah, I bet that happens quite a bit, where oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying that much attention. Oh, I'm sorry, I was looking at the woman in row five. Oh, I was thinking about what I'm going to be doing tonight after the game. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about that. I wasn't paying attention. I bet it happens a lot to hear a player come out and say, I wasn't paying attention. Speaking of the Pelicans, here's something else that happened in that regard. They lost to the Knicks 122-112.
Yeah.
And after the game, Zion Williamson. Oh.
He's in love.
Oh, he's in love.
He's in love.
And he's not afraid to show it. He's in love with New York.
New York is the mecca of basketball. I love playing here. When I played here in college, and this is my first time playing here in the pros, and I mean, this atmosphere, you know, whether they're cheering for you, whether they're booing for you, it's amazing. Honestly, I think outside of New Orleans, obviously, I think this might be my favorite place to play outside of New Orleans. I can't lie to you.
Is that one of those better left unsaid moments for Zion Williamson, or does he not care?
I had to think about this in different terms to kind of like make it work for me.
Okay.
If last year or the year before, if Devin Booker had said the same thing, how would we react?
We'd be freaking the you-know-what out.
If Devin Booker had said, oh my God, New York's my favorite place to play. I love playing here. It's just, you know, this is the mecca. This is the place that... If Devin Booker had said that in his second or third year in the NBA...
Am I wrong? We would have freaked the you-know-what out.
But that's how you kind of like...
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
I can't relate it to, I mean, Zion in New Orleans, but I could relate it if it was here.
Sure. Sure, and I think if you...
I think you'd panic a little bit. Oh, my God, he wants to go to New York.
Frame the conversation that way, you know, because you're nervous about losing a guy like that, then yeah, that I don't know how else you're supposed to think about it if you're a New Orleans. Now, he could just... He's a kid. He could just be giving a gleefully honest answer about, you know, how he feels and, oh, man, I love playing here. It's so much fun.
Or setting the tables or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he just doesn't understand how those words are going to be perceived. Or maybe he does. Maybe he knows exactly how those words are going to be perceived. And he doesn't care. I don't know, but you're absolutely right. If I'm a Pelicans fan, that's exactly how I feel.
Can you imagine after getting Anthony Davis and having him leave on you if they have Zion leave on him?
It'd be
my God.
Disaster.
Yeah. I mean, it's Dave Griffin, you know, his responsibility is to make sure that Zion stays.
Yeah.
That's his, and the only way to do that is to put the best team together that wins games. Eric Bledsoe is not the guy you want in your corner in that situation.
The Arizona Cardinals have the 16th pick in the draft. What does the recent history of that selection mean for Arizona? Maybe much better than you're thinking. Plus, we will go on the clock. It's our first pick, my first pick, of the ultimate mock draft here at 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. That's next here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Previously on the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
The pick is in. Let's go to the podium and see what they're going to do here.
With the first pick of the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence, quarterback, Clemson.
With the second pick of the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the New York Jets select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
With the third pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Justin Fields, quarterback, Ohio State.
With the fourth overall pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Kyle Pitts,
ooh,
tight end from the University of Florida.
Vinny's pick was the only one that elicited a reaction from the co-host. Like, everybody else got it out nice and clean, but it was Vinny taking Kyle Pitts, number four from the Atlanta Falcons, as representing the Atlanta Falcons, that got the, oh, from Dan Bickley, which I think you probably would have done the same thing. It is our ultimate mock draft here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, and I would imagine by now you've gotten the gist of it. It started with Wolf this morning in the first pick. Doug had the second pick. Bickley had the third pick. Vinny had the fourth pick. I've got the fifth pick representing the Cincinnati Bengals, and then later in the show, Gambo will have the sixth pick representing the Miami Dolphins.
That's right.
A team that we're told in real life might be thinking about moving out of number six, potentially. Ian Rappaport tweeted that out earlier. Have you got any calls, Gambo, in this fake world we live in?
Yeah, nobody is. I have other picks down, you know, with this draft. I haven't even called myself to see if there's anything out there for me.
Seriously, that's a good idea. I should look later and see what other teams I have. Maybe I could just make a trade with myself. I am announcing a trade with myself. I am trading the 12th pick to me in exchange for the 25th pick from me and a future second and a future third. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. So Gambo's pick will come up a little later on. Right now, I'm representing the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Cincinnati Bengals are on the clock.
The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
Ultimate Mock Draft.
Burns and Gambo are on the clock.
Many choices here for the Cincinnati Bengals. Many good football players. To me, it's a very simple choice between two players. It comes down to a simple choice. Do I want the wide receiver to help out my franchise quarterback, or do I want the left tackle to help out my franchise quarterback? I'd love to give him the wide receiver. He's probably going to be the best of the bunch. Got all the physical tools. Of course, I'm talking about Ja'Marr Chase from LSU. I'd love to put those two together and see what they can do. And then I think to myself, man, did I watch my quarterback get his brains beat in all last year? Yeah. I watched my quarterback get his brains beat in all last year. The pick is in. With the fifth pick in the 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station Ultimate Mock Draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Penei Sewell, offensive tackle, Oregon.
Penei Sewell, offensive tackle, Oregon.
Sewell is one of the more discussed players who opted out of the 2020 college football season. Sewell's an exceptionally gifted athlete that explodes out of stance and into lateral blocks that others can't make. He truly shined in 2019 as he started 13 of the 14 possible games at left tackle and did not allow a single sack in those games. He ultimately won the Outland Trophy that season and was selected as a unanimous first-team All-American. At 6'6 and 325 pounds, Sewell has ideal size, quickness, and power for the position. NFL Comp, 49ers tackle Trent Williams.
I'll take me one of those for my franchise
right,
quarterback, Joe Burrow.
Yeah. Not worried about his short arms a little bit right there?
Not too worried about that.
Okay.
No, not too worried about that. Yeah. Should I be? Would you have been?
Well, I'm just saying, if you're worried about the short arms. And I got to get myself some protection for Joe Burrow right there. That's the right pick.
Joe Burrow got his clock cleaned last year behind that offensive line. He needs help. And as much as I want to give him a wide receiver, I got to give him that left tackle. So you're on the clock now representing the Miami Dolphins. Sometime in the 4 o'clock hour, you will make your pick. And then it's going to flip over to Doug and Wolf tomorrow with the Lions pick at 7. The Panthers pick at 8, and I'm telling you, if you're, Dan Bickley, and you want to move up to get a quarterback because you're the Patriots, you might want to. If you're Ron Wolfley, and you want to move up to get a quarterback, you might want to. If you're a team looking to move back up to get a franchise quarterback, I would imagine number 7 and number 8 are ideal landing spots for you to move into to get a quarterback if you're picking a team that doesn't have one, so just consider that. 16th pick in the NFL draft for the Arizona Cardinals. Get back to real life now.
Okay.
Our friend Jess Root over at CardsWire.com put together a 10-year list of all of the players over the last 10 years that were selected with the 16th pick in the draft. It's a pretty good list. I'm not going to lie to you. There are some very, very good football players, some very excellent football players in particular. Linebacker Tremaine Edmonds.
Good player.
Cornerback Marlon Humphrey.
Nice player.
Guard Zach Martin.
Yeah.
Defensive end Ryan Kerrigan are the four studs.
So those are good players chosen. You should be able to, that's a nice spot to pick, right? I mean, it's a good spot to pick. You're usually getting, one of the top one or two players at your position, You're not getting the 6th or 7th best player at a position. You're getting, 2nd or 3rd player. If you're getting a wide receiver, you're probably getting the 3rd best wide receiver. If you're getting a cornerback, you're probably getting the 2nd or 3rd best cornerback. If you're getting a linebacker, it could be the 2nd. So you're getting a guy that you're going to really like that's one of the best players at his position coming out. So it should be a position that you very much nail. I mean, it should be at that 16th pick. Now, later on in the draft, teams take some chances here and there, but at 16, you could end up with a very good player.
Brian Burns got drafted in that slot in 2019. He's got 16.5 sacks for the Panthers in the 2 years that he's been there. He's been good. A.J. Terrell was the pick last year, the cornerback going to the Atlanta Falcons. As a rookie, he had an interception, 7 pass breakups, started all 14 games he played. He was that cornerback who stepped in and started right away. Played pretty well. There have been some, not so good picks. EJ Manuel was the 16th pick overall in the draft back in 2013. Quentin Copples was the 16th pick back in 2012. He hasn't played since 2015. Kevin Johnson, the cornerback, he's still in the league. He's just okay. But for the most part, there have been some good players. And you're right, sitting at 16, if you do your homework right and you scout the player right, you should be able to get a very good football player in that spot.
Yeah, I like where they're at right now. Now, the tough part about being at 16 is it is harder to move up if you want to, because if you're trying to move up into that top 5, there's 10 other teams that have a better pick than you, that if they want to move up, it's a little bit more difficult to move up. So, and the other part is that at 16, all the top quarterbacks are gone. So if you want to move down, it is harder to move down because, the top player at the top offensive lineman is gone. The top wide receiver is gone. The top corner is gone. The top quarterbacks are gone. So if you want to move down, it's more difficult to move down because, what is somebody moving up for? So that becomes harder to do.
All we've heard all season long is that the Suns are young and inexperienced. But even with all of that youth, is it time for Monty Williams to start resting guys for the playoffs? Or do they need all the experience of playing they can get? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.